everybody. Welcome to another edition of Move the Sticks. I'm Rhett Lewis here with our former NFL Scouts lead draft analyst, Daniel Jeremiah, Bucky Brooks, as we are ready to roll here following your Week 7 Sunday. I just got to tell you guys, once we get to episode number 600 on these Mondays, I am absolutely pulling a Mike Evans, but I am not going to hand that ball off. That one's going straight to eBay. Okay, I'm not giving you an opportunity to renegotiate that.
Opportunistic.
How about that from the Bucks win over the Bears this past weekend? We'll get to that matchup, but we begin like we always do on a Monday with our big three, top three games of the weekend, our takeaways from them. We'll start with the Bengals and Ravens. Number one seed right now in the AFC belongs to Cincinnati after a huge win on the road in Baltimore. Career high in passing yards for Joe Burrow with 416, 201 of them going right there to the rookie sensation, Ja'Marr Chase, also career high for him. And the Bengals defense, solid effort containing Lamar Jackson, blowout of Baltimore, 41-17. Bucky, remember in training camp when everybody was so concerned about Joe Burrow coming back from the knee injury, struggles on offense? Man, that's a statement win and a big-time playmaking effort from Burrow and Chase.
Yeah, it's a big win for the Cincinnati Bengals. It's a big win because offensively we saw them do exactly what we had hoped that they would be able to do. All the weapons that they have on the outside, the three wide receivers, Higgins, Boyd, Ja'Marr Chase, the two running backs, Samaje Perine and Joe Mixon getting down. We saw a complete and total effort. And then when you look at Joe Burrow, the maestro, the guy who is really doing it all when it comes to running this offense, they just look so comfortable. They look so dynamic. And I really think the Cincinnati Bengals are going to be around. They're going to be in the mix down the stretch.
Yeah, explosives, right? I mean, you saw explosives in the passing game. Obviously, Ja'Marr Chase had a big game. You saw it in the run game with both those backs. It's hard to win in this league if you're not getting explosives. And when I flip it over to the other side with the Ravens, this is my concern with this football team. As you kind of get deeper into the season, as you get into the postseason, we've seen Derek Carr carve up the secondary. We saw Carson Wentz do it. Now Joe Burrow's done it. That secondary has got holes, and it's not all their fault. There have been legit injuries that they've had to navigate through.
Surely.
But, man, that scares me. With all the quarterbacks in the AFC, they've got to get that cleaned up.
Well, I mean, their best corner, Marlon Humphrey, did have Ja'Marr Chase one-on-one. It looked like in a couple of situations, Ja'Marr won some of those. By the way, on pace for over 1,800 yards as a rookie this year. He is blowing Anquan Boldin's previous high mark of the first seven games of a career in terms of receiving yards out of the water. He's over 700 already. Phenomenal work from Ja'Marr Chase. But let's get back to the Bengals defense. Also deserves a ton of credit here. One, for not letting Lamar Jackson wreck this game.
Yeah, I can show you a play that just show you the game plan that they have, the rush plan that they use, which is fantastic. You're really trying to build that wall in front of Lamar Jackson. You're going to see Hendrickson up here at the top. He ends up getting the sack. But see, dropping off there, 55, that's Logan Wilson, the linebacker, who's spying Lamar. If he wants to take off and go up the middle, they've got a body waiting for him, and they just kind of hem him in. That was seven bodies creating that wall where he couldn't really see through it. There was nowhere for him to go. They did a nice job with their rush plan against Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, Ogunjobi eventually getting that sack, as you mentioned there. Sam Hubbard with a career day. I mean, they got it working up front for Cincinnati. All right, so let's move on here on the big three to game number two. And for that, we're going to take you back to Nashville, where the Chiefs and Titans got together. And look, give him the MVP now, all right? It's not just a quarterback award, right? I mean, he's showing you he's got QB skills. Derrick Henry with a little pop pass there, and the Titans are on a roll. Three-game win streak. How about this for Patrick Mahomes? First time without an offensive touchdown, fewest points in the Mahomes era, and Mahomes more turnovers this year heading into Week 8 than all of 2019 and 2020. Bucky, though, we'll get to the Chiefs in a second. Titans, again, they're figuring out that their offense runs through Derrick Henry.
It absolutely runs through the king. It runs through the king. It's like a chess thing. It's all about protecting the king, and everyone feeds off of that. And when you look at Derrick Henry, it's the physicality and toughness that he brings. It's the imposing presence that he has as a runner that sets the table for everything else. We saw A.J. Brown have a 100-yard game. We saw Ryan Tannehill successfully throw the ball to a number of other playmakers in the passing game because they can use the threat of handing the ball to Derrick Henry to set the table for the others. And the Tennessee Titans are a physical team. They want to play old-school smash-mouth football, and it's working for them. Last 2 weeks, we've seen them knock off the AFC Championship game finalists, the Buffalo Bills and the Kansas City Chiefs, respectively. It might be time to start talking about them as a legitimate contender.
sitting there at 5-2. And what did you see from the defense there in Tennessee?
Well, I don't know that we talk enough about their defense, and yeah. We've seen it with their pass rush and Harold Landry and company just getting upfield. They're able to play coverage because you don't have to bring a lot of bodies when you're winning your one-on-ones, and they did that repeatedly. You see there the win over Orlando Brown Jr. on the edge. They won those one-on-one battles, and I've been saying this about the Chiefs for a while. This offensive line is better built to run block than they are in pass protection with these new additions that they've brought there. For the life of me, that's another question.
Right,
we'll get to that later, but man, to me, this was a game dominated by their front.
Bud Dupree got his first sack as a Titan. And here's the thing that kept coming to me as I was watching this game on NFL Game Day Live yesterday while we were calling all the highlights. Mahomes right now feels to me a little like pre-Matt LaFleur, Aaron Rodgers, where like wants everything to be off schedule, right? Nothing comes out that feels like on time. And like the stat that I point to here, courtesy of Next Gen Stats, on throws that took longer than 2.5 seconds for him to get the ball out of his hand, 8 of 22, 100 yards, and an interception in this game. Now, he was turning down completions, and he admitted it. He admitted to pressing too much too early in this game, and just there were throws that he normally makes. They're out of rhythm right now.
We've been saying the same thing, Buck, right? We've been saying patience and physicality. That is the key out of this hole the Kansas City Chiefs are in. And every week we get back on here and we say they weren't patient and they weren't physical. It's the same thing every week. You're going to see that too high safety look, and they're going to challenge you to be patient, and they're going to challenge you to be physical. And I feel like they failed this test week in and week out.
They have failed the test because they won't run the football. If you want to get the two safeties out of the parking lot, you got to run the football and make somebody come down. Now, we talked about this. Andy Reid is an offensive lineman at heart, but he's an offensive lineman that played at BYU. When we were together all in Green Bay, we didn't really like to run the football. We wanted to throw it all over the lot. And so some of this is Andy Reid being more comfortable trusting number 15 as opposed to being able to trust the running backs that they have in place. They need to run the football because it'll slow the game down. It also mitigates some of the risk with the turnovers.
Not surprised to see the Titans sitting there at 5-2 right now, but for the Chiefs to be 3-4 wow. heading into Week 8, man, that is shocking so far. Probably the biggest shock so far of this 2021 season. Let's move on to the third game of the Big Three, and let's do that by taking you back to Vegas. Raiders and Eagles here. Eagles scored on their opening drive of the game. They had balance. 4 runs, 4 passes. They're feeling good. Then the Raiders went on and scored 30 unanswered, and the game was out of reach by the start of the fourth quarter. 33-22, the final. Derek Carr surgical for the Raiders offense in this game, and the team now 2-0 under interim head coach Rich Bisaccia. Bucky, what's going so well for this Raiders offense right now?
They're playing as a team, and they're playing as a team meaning that they're distributing the ball to all the playmakers. Greg Olsen and Derek Carr are really on a great page or in sync together, and they're doing a really good job of incorporating all of the weapons that they have. And because they're using more of the players on offense, it makes them a tougher team to defend. And we're seeing everybody get down. But I really love the synergy and connection that I'm seeing between play caller and playmaker, meaning Derek Carr. I believe he and Greg Olsen are on the same page. As a result, this offense looks like one that we hadn't seen in the previous 5 weeks.
And if you think about it, as long as John Gruden was the head coach of the Raiders, he was going to be the face of that team. This has been handed to Derek Carr. It is his team now. He is the face of this organization, and he's stepped up. And I go back to the basketball analogy. You remember when you're in high school and you come out of the gym, the first thing you do, maybe do a little lap around the court, and then we go right into the layup line, right? We're going to make some layups. We're going to get limbered up a little bit, and then after that, we'll go shoot around. That's what they did in this game plan. It was some easy completions, 3 or 4, got him in a rhythm. Next thing you know, it's 3rd and 15, and he's ripping an unbelievable ball to Zay Jones down the field.
Yeah.
But they get him comfortable. And I see so many of these teams around the league that fail to do that. So kudos to Derek Carr and Greg Olsen. They've done a nice job of getting that stuff all set up.
In addition to the fact that he completed 91% of his passes, almost all of them coming from in the pocket. In fact, Next Gen Stats has this 93.8 completion percentage inside the pocket, highest by any player in the NGS era, which means like he didn't have to escape pressure that much in this game. They did not blitz him, and they just don't blitz here. And that's what I don't really understand here, Bucky, because like you've got the personnel that's used to what Jim Schwartz was doing a couple of years ago, which was sending bodies left and right.
Somewhere in football heaven, Jim Johnson is looking at the Eagles play, and he's absolutely just – he clicked the channel. Because Jim Johnson, the late legendary defensive coordinator for the Philadelphia Eagles, it was always about pressure. And it's continued on for the last 20 years. The Eagles are about pressure. They're about playing hard and fast and coming after and dictating the terms. And what we're seeing now is a passive defense that's reading and reacting. And the Eagles players aren't built like that. The city of Philadelphia wants to see an aggressive defense, and we're not seeing that. So there's a disconnect between the way they're playing and the way the players are best suited to play.
It's one of those things when you change coaches and you change schemes, some of those issues arise. I know when I was in Philadelphia going back to 11 and 12, a joke in the building was read is a four-letter word for a defensive lineman. We're not going to sit and read. We are going to always be in attack mode, and that's simply not the way they're playing right now.
Yeah, and you mentioned Jim Johnson. I mean, Jim Schwartz carried that on the last couple of years before this season as well. So we'll see if the Eagles' defense can figure it out and get a little additional pressure on quarterbacks here for the rest of this season. And as you get a look now at your NFC division leaders, just a combined three losses total through 7 weeks here in the NFL from the NFC's four division leaders. And the Cowboys' lone loss coming to the Bucs there at 6-1. Rams up there as well, obviously out in the NFC West, but behind the Cardinals. So there's some really good teams in this division. And right now we're going to kind of take apart this conference, rather, and kind of look at top quarterback, top play caller, top offensive weapons, and then top defense. Let's start with the quarterback here. And who are we taking?
Go ahead, Buck.
What do you got?
I'm going to give Bucky this one because this is the hardest question.
So I mean, this is the easy one for me. I'm going to go to America's team. How about Dak Prescott? When you look at Dak Prescott in the last 10 and a half games, he has 5 400-yard games. And you talk about a guy playing at a high level at the position. This has become his team. He's throwing around the yard. You look at the cast of playmakers that he has around him, CeeDee Lamb and Amari Cooper. The tight ends are getting it done. And I know Tom Brady is Tom Brady. He has a Lifetime Achievement Award for being the greatest quarterback of all time.
Also pretty good, too.
But right now, Dak Prescott is balling out of control. Give me Dak Prescott.
Yeah, but you can't mention the receivers. So that's a different conversation.
Well, I mean, that's
just talking about the quarterback.
That's what he's throwing to.
Aaron Rodgers. So you're gonna go Dak over Aaron Rodgers?
Oh yeah, I got
Brady.
Right now,
Kyler's playing.
Right now, it's right now.
Okay.
All right. Look, I'm in charge of picking the best offensive skill position group out of this NFC conference, out of these four division leaders, and I am going to go to Tampa. Sorry, Bucky. And yes, Tom Brady is a big part of that here, but look at the depth of this group. That's what ultimately gives them the nod, right? They were missing Antonio Brown this past week. They've been missing Gronk the past 3 or 4 weeks, and they're still putting up the points. Brady's still slinging it, finding Mike Evans, finding Chris Godwin, Scotty Miller, and then Leonard Fournette, I think, has been one of the revelations here, an added piece as his improved play has continued based off what we saw at the tail end of that postseason run.
Well, look, if it was going to say best individual weapon, I would go with Davante Adams in Green Bay.
Probably so,
if you're going to go best duo, I can make a case for the Cowboys. But if you're talking about the whole group, I think it is Arizona and Tampa. I think that's the conversation.
Yeah, honorable mention certainly to Arizona. Yeah.
I don't think you can go wrong with Arizona and Tampa Bay. But I'll go with Tampa Bay because I do like the fact that if your third receiver is a Hall of Famer in Antonio Brown, I think you're doing okay. So Tampa Bay.
So now we've got the quarterback, we've got the offensive skill positions, but the play caller, right? The offensive coordinator has to put it all together. Yeah. Who's doing that the best right now?
Again, there's good options with all of these teams. They're all rolling. I think I'm going to go Kellen Moore, though. And to me, the reason why I say that is I look at creativity. I look at still having the physicality in the game plan, which he possesses. To me, the versatility from game plan to game plan, being able to morph and do different things. Bucky mentioned Dak, how great he's playing. I mean, your job as a play caller is to make your quarterback comfortable, and I've never seen Dak as comfortable as he is this year.
Only actual offensive coordinator that calls plays amongst this group of division leaders. All the other ones fall on the head coach, whether it's Cliff Kingsbury, Matt LaFleur, what do you got?
I was going to say, real quick, side note on that. Is anybody going to be in more demand than Kellen Moore after the season?
It's a good question.
He's going to be the number one candidate.
Look, there are a lot of people that are going to be interested in Kellen Moore. I will say this. We talk about play caller.
Byron Leftwich, obviously, there, too.
And all of his guys that are kind of handling the duties when he's out, they're doing a really good job in Arizona. This is a far more physical team than people give them credit for because of the running game.
I agree. The running game has been much better this year. That two-headed monster, Chase Edmonds and James Conner, I mean, really
good. If we go through this whole exercise and we don't choose Arizona, who's the only undefeated team, we're going to get a lot of grief here. Is it on your shoulders right now?
Well, we need a defense, Bucky.
You've got to go Arizona.
Yeah, we're going to go with the Arizona Cardinals here.
There we go.
The Arizona Cardinals defense, Vance Joseph, has done a great job of dialing up the pressures with this team. And the veteran players that they have up front, J.J. Watt and Chandler Jones, are absolutely doing it up front. Buda Baker being a guy
Marcus
that can be a presence there.
Back in the
house. Then when you look at those two young linebackers, Collins and Isaiah Simmons, man, you have to be excited about what they're doing in Arizona because they are not afraid to bring press and they bring it from everywhere.
So no love for the Packers in this segment amongst the group of division leaders.
They're better. They're better.
I mean, to me, look, the Dak versus Aaron Rodgers is a good debate. I'm sure people on social media will have varying opinions on that.
You think nah, so?
I think it's a good debate. Yeah, I think Aaron Rodgers is playing at a pretty darn high level.
I would agree. Time for the Elite Eight. We've got a Halloween-themed edition here, guys. We got tricks, we got treats, we got ghosts, we got goblins, we got haunting performances. The Bengals are basically dressed in orange and black as the Ravens' Halloween nightmare. Bucky, lead us off here. What do you got?
Oh, man, I'm going to go like a big old bag of candy corn. We got all kinds of tricks in the bag. We can go with the trick plays that we saw from everyone throughout the league. Just so many big plays. Everyone's trying to dial it up. And so, to me, first is the Detroit Lions with fake punts and onside kicks and just doing anything and everything to put themselves in a position to win games.
So I like
that. It was kind of a trick. I mean, it was
a nice ball by the punter, by the way.
I know. He threw a nice little hinge route out there. Saw the onside kick. We got Derrick Henry running pop-up passes, jump passes from a Wildcat situation. Kendrick Bourne running a double pass, which was a nice touchdown. So to me, it's all the trick plays. People digging in the bag, getting to the Halloween spirit.
Well, see, I just feel like that Mike Vrabel was like, all right, look, if we're not going to give Derrick Henry the MVP as a running back, let's let him throw a couple, right? If that award is reserved for quarterbacks.
It's going to go on your Heisman reel a little bit. You want tricks? I'm going to go treats. It was a treat watching Daniel Jones with a ridiculous one-handed catch. We all know quarterback's the most athletic guys on the field. I don't think we're breaking any news here. But watch this on the throwback. Not only to go up and get it with one hand, but then to take the shot and hold on to the ball. First of all, no gloves. Because of some of the shots he's taken this year, I don't necessarily love this play call. But when they're missing a lot of their skill guys, you got to get offense wherever you can. And it doesn't get any better than that. That's maybe the second best one-handed catch in New York Giants history.
Dante Pettis on the throw there. I mean, look. They didn't have a ton of targets, right? Kenny Galladay was out. Kadarius Toney was out. Saquon Barkley.
I just realized.
He had to get out there and catch
them. Literally was like, Colin Johnson plays for the Giants. Did not know that.
There
That's
you
what
go.
He is
yeah,
right
welcome
now.
Back. Yeah. Okay. I am going to go, guys. Excuse the grammar here for a second, but Frank Reich and Carson Wentz ain't afraid of no ghosts, okay? And you go late in that game, and I should say, I guess, ain't afraid of no rain, not afraid of the situation, not afraid to go for the jugular when I think on those last two third downs, nobody would have faulted them for turning around and handing it off to Jonathan Taylor. Third and five, they get the first down with Michael Pittman. The next third down, a third and 10 with about 3 minutes to go, they go for it all. And Pittman with a terrific catch in the end zone for the touchdown. That just illustrates to me again the confidence that these two guys have in each other, that Frank Reich says, I'm going to put it in Carson Wentz's hands, and Carson Wentz saying, I'm going to pay off that trust, and I'm going to make it count. And it will certainly help that Michael Pittman absolutely out-muscled Drake or Patrick for that one.
Watching that game, I was just thinking back, man, if the Colts wouldn't have blown that game against Baltimore.
I know.
We would be talking about them really starting to roll here with Carson Wentz and getting comfortable.
But still, you got to feel good about where they are compared to where they started, especially back in training camp when he was getting hurt. All right, Bucky, you got another one for us?
Yeah, I got one. How about a scary combination in Lamar Jackson and Marquise Brown? Hollywood Brown has been getting down the field because they're pushing the ball down the field more in Baltimore than we've seen in the past. Look, it's all about the deep ball. Lamar Jackson, that is a little unorthodox, a little deep ball jump pass, but sometimes
scary.
You'll see
that
those things.
Scary.
But the deep connection that we're seeing between Lamar Jackson and number five, Hollywood Brown, it is really complementing that dangerous running game, and it's making the Baltimore Ravens offense more explosive and really one that is feared.
Truthfully, I'll be honest here. I don't watch scary movies, so the whole Hollywood theme, I can be a little bit out of it. But I do believe curses is a subject that comes up during Halloween. And when you watch the Carolina Panthers without Christian McCaffrey, that looks like a cursed offense. I mean, they can't complete balls. They cannot get anything going. You can watch Sam Darnold, and you see that lack of confidence that started to show up during his time with the Jets. You saw that was a terrible interception down there in the red zone. That is both a curse and scary going forward. They've got to get him back in this offense. He makes that whole thing go.
Man, that was tough to watch against the Giants team with their backs against the wall. I mean, all the odds against the Giants in that game, and Carolina absolutely handed it to him with a couple of
turnovers. P.J. Walker wasn't any better when he got in there either.
No. I mean, he was in a bad situation too there. And I will go right now with a guy who is haunting the AFC East.
You're really selling this one.
And might haunt the AFC East for years to come and might haunt the rest of the league for not getting taken in the first round. Christian Barmore, the defensive lineman here for the New England Patriots, is finding his way into the opposing team's backfields at a pretty good rate. Certainly harassed Zach Wilson and Mike White later in that game when Zach was forced to run. Five quarterback pressures for Christian Barmore on 27 rushes. That is a pretty good efficiency rate in terms of getting pressure, and it's a career high for him.
It's interesting with him. When you watched him early in the year at Alabama, he wasn't playing very well. He was struggling. Then he got hot in the playoffs. He was unblockable. So one of those scouting conundrums, right? Which is the real Christian Barmore? Well, we're seeing it was the guy we saw late in the year.
Exactly right. I'll just say, like, in this game, I noticed him a lot more than I noticed Quinnen Williams for the Jets. So.
Well, it's a good thing you noticed him in the game, because if you looked on the other side with the Jets, you didn't know as much of anything, because I just saw ghosts whenever I looked at the Jets defense. It's one of the worst defensive performances that I've seen, because it's one thing if there's a gold jacket quarterback that is putting a 50 burger on you. It's another thing if it's Mac Jones as a rookie putting up 50 points. And when you look at it, they never were able to make Mac Jones uncomfortable. It was dink and dunk and throw it all over the yard and have fun. It was like a 7-on-7 session on air. And so to me, if I'm Robert Saleh, I am really disappointed the way my defense has played, because they should never allow 50-plus points to a team led by a rookie quarterback.
Yeah, and look, we can talk about the lack of the true vertical passing game there with New England. This is the offense they run, and they just put a 50 spot up on an NFL
team.
They
do it so efficiently.
Mac Jones is doing it really well.
We'll get more on that here.
We'll get to him in a little bit.
Yeah.
Look, I'm going to go with a pumpkin, and I know this is kind of a loose analogy here for Halloween. I get that. But I'm going to say that the Washington Redskins defense has kind of turned into a pumpkin, because I had such high expectations for this group that we were going to see a dominant front, and it just hasn't really happened. Now, they got three sacks in this game. They did some good things. But Aaron Rodgers still carved them up. And to me, it's just a big disappointment for the year. I thought that defensive line, all those first-rounders, we would see them take over games. They've had some moments, but this is not the group we thought it was going to be.
So I think this is, I think I'm the only one here. I'm going to give a second candy corn mention, because I think I'm the only one on the seats that like candy corn.
I like candy
but
corn.
But I feel like
Mike Leach is
you got
candy
like
corn.
The pumpkins in your bag of candy corn, and you're really not in love with the pumpkins.
And one more Halloween analogy before we get out of this segment here. This is like what happens. We carved the Washington football team defense's pumpkin way too early, and now it has completely gone rotten. I know from experience, because this just happened at our house. And we're out of pumpkins already, and we still got 6 days to Halloween. So, okay, that is our look at our Elite Eight. Sending some good vibes out to Zach Wilson, who was injured early on here in the Jets' loss to the Patriots. Second quarter, Matt Judon gets a hit on him as he lets loose a deep ball. It is a PCL sprain, according to our NFL Network insider Ian Rapoport, likely out the next couple of weeks. We'll definitely miss some time. So Mike White had to come in, formerly a fifth-round pick of the Dallas Cowboys, and finish that game and likely suiting up next couple of weeks for the Jets. What did you see from Wilson, though?
He did some good things. Look, there's only 12 dropbacks in that game when you watch it, but made some big-time throws. They've got to fix the communication issues with that offensive
line.
No
question. All right, time to hand out our rookie report cards, as we do every week. And limited sample size this week for the rookies with Trevor Lawrence out. Trey Lance didn't play this past week for the 49ers either. So I'm going to start us off with Mac Jones. And look, anytime your offense puts up 50 points, you're going to be in the A range, okay, Mac? So you got to feel good about this one, brother. And I'm not getting any guff from the guys sitting on the set here. We gave him an A-.
How do you give him an A- and not just an A?
Oh, come on.
Really? I mean, what's the guy? The guy scored 50 points
every week.
He scores 50 points, he can't even get an A?
Let me tell you why I went with the minus. Bottom note there, deep ball placement is a work in progress. Missed a couple that he took. The ones that they did take shots on down the field, missed a couple of those. Like to see those connected on as he continues to progress. But right now, here's the moral of the story for the Patriots and for Mac Jones. The dude does not pass up completions. If you're going to give him throws under 10 yards, he will absolutely take them. They've attempted 164 passes under 10 yards in the air, and he's completed 83% of them. That is an insane percentage. They are so efficient with it.
I mean, he just kills you with the paper cuts.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just all dink and dunk, get it to the playmakers. They do a great job, as they've always done, of utilizing the underneath areas, letting their guys catch and run and make plays happen on the make things happen on the perimeter. Mac Jones is just disciplined enough as a young quarterback to do it. That's why he's playing really well.
And they run after catch. Over 1,000 of Mac Jones's passing yards have come on throws under 10 yards in the air. All right, let's move on to Justin Fields. What do you got there?
It's a tough watch, man. Watching that Bears offense struggled mightily. I'm going to give Justin, though, a C+. You know, there were some good things to take from that. You saw some big-time power throws that he made. You saw the toughness, which has been evident each and every week. He has taken a beating. The things to improve, again, sometimes the clock's a little bit slow. We've talked about that in some previous performances by Fields. And I think there's times where he's predetermining where the ball's going. There's not a lot of pre-snap movement and motion. There's not a lot of coverage indicators that limits him in terms of being able to identify things. The biggest frustration for me, guys, I'll pull up the numbers right here because our guy Garrett gave it to me. When you're watching, I'm like, man, he looks good in play action. I wish they would do a little more of that. Well, here are the numbers. 65.6% completion percentage on play action with a 99 quarterback rating. Not on play action, 54.5% with a 49.7 quarterback rating. So more play action, please. That's what I'm asking for here for the Bears.
Oh, okay. So basically you're at the dinner table saying more P's, please.
Yes.
Just more play action passes. Make the game easier for Justin Fields. That's what you want to see. And that has been one of the biggest issues. When the Bears are unable to run the ball early to kind of set the table, it does become more difficult and challenging when they get into a true drop-back game.
And we mentioned over 1,000 yards passing on short passes for Mac Jones, just 400 yards in that category
of not a lot of gimmies.
Chicago Bears. Yeah, they're just not nearly as efficient as some of his rookie counterparts. All right, another quarterback grade. We got a handout here for rookie Davis Mills in a real tough spot for the Texans against the best team in the NFC, the only undefeated team in the league, in the Arizona Cardinals. I'm going to give Davis Mills a C. Look, we feel like we have to grade on a curve with the Texans because things look, you got to call it like you see it. This is not a great team right now, and they had some critical pressure errors. I mean, like, they were trying to scheme up some protections, and guys were just whiffing left and right. He had some drops as well, but man, is he big throw capable and looks really good out on the move on play action.
Bucky, as the commissioner of our Move and Stick show, I want to ask you right now, is it okay if we orchestrate a trade? Because I am so sick of watching the Bears offense. You've got to be sick of watching the Houston Texans offense.
Exactly.
What do you think about making a trade here?
Good idea. All right, next week?
Yes, I will force myself to watch this Houston offense. You, my friend, have a fun watching the Bears. Okay, we'll switch it up.
I am just going to look at next week. I want to make sure I get the opponents before we do this. I want to make sure I'm going to get it. All right, Niners and Bears. I could do that.
No way.
And then you get to watch the Rams and Texans.
Okay, good. That's a trade. Done.
Okay. All right, we're going to trade it.
Bucky sanctioned it. It can happen.
So as I mentioned, we're a few days ahead of Halloween. Which means we actually have another holiday to get to before Christmas. That's Thanksgiving. Yet,
oh yeah,
DJ has already put up the Christmas.
They're not on. Okay, they're not on, but they're
how
up.
How are we putting the Christmas?
They're ready.
Up
they're all ready
before.
To go. It's a nice day. We got the lights
like the
up.
Mall. Like the mall.
No,
like you have stuff
no.
up before we
so
even,
here's
the lights
the, are
you
not
have
on.
Christmas lights up before Halloween?
Yeah, they're like, not on. They're up. There's a difference.
He was just trying to be productive, right? As a part of the Chargers radio broadcast team, you had the week off.
Yeah.
So you were just trying
Let's
to take advantage.
Done. Check it off the list.
On the bye week. Which clues us into this next segment here. Bye week tune-up time.
I was wondering how that got into the Chargers.
Show. Yeah.
Yeah, look, when you look at the Chargers team, their area of focus, it's not a secret. It's just cleaning up their run defense. They're going to play with light boxes. That's what they do in this scheme. But they've got to be more physical and more precise in their fits. And that comes, Buck, as you know, from that second and third level. You've got to get safeties down in there. They've got to fill properly. They've missed Nasir Adderley when he was out. He did a nice job in that area. But that has got to be a focus because we've seen the Dallas Cowboys, the Cleveland Browns, and the Baltimore Ravens just run the ball right down their throats.
Yeah, too leaky. And I understand the too high look does a great job of taking away the big plays, but you need to be more physical. Brandon Staley has done a really good job of fudging the numbers in terms of being able to kind of manipulate it with movement. They just got to do a better job of tackling and stopping run games.
They don't need to be a top five run defense, yep. But let's not be the worst.
Let's just be
better. 30 seconds.
Right,
so let's get up in that 18 to 20 range.
I mean, middling is totally fine in that category here because it would be a big improvement. Similar situation for me with the Buffalo Bills. Not a lot to pick at there. I mean, like, that was a game that they just lost against the Tennessee Titans, and, you know, they easily could have won that game, you know, if they convert some short yardage situations, but you can't let Derrick Henry wreck the game, especially when this could absolutely be a team that you're going to face in the playoffs. So you got to get the run defense corrected here. You can't let 22 go run wild in your defense, and they've been a really good defense this season. And one of the things that I wanted to see them do to improve on from last year to this, they have. Run game has been better, especially down in the red zone with Zach Moss and Devin Singletary. So just don't let a run game ruin the game for you is basically the moral of the story.
Oh, yeah, you want to see them get better when it comes to it. And look, when I go, I'm looking at the Dallas Cowboys, and I want to see the Dallas Cowboys continue to improve, but I want to see Mike McCarthy improve when it comes to game management, clock management. understanding time, score, situation, what calls are necessary in those situations so they can put the team in the best position to win. Right now, the talent has masked some of the deficiencies that they've had when it comes to the management. But as you get to playing better teams, the coaching has to put his part. He has to put his feel on the game.
Yeah, my son just took the ACT. You know, they give you those flashcards you can study. I wonder if during the break, Mike McCarthy's like, second and seven, 2 minutes left.
What are you?
I got the answer right. Yeah. Just go through a lot of scenarios and try and freshen up.
Yeah, but I mean, look, so much improvement for this team overall. Defensively,
oh, yeah.
I mean, like, where do we credit this Dan Quinn defense for improving the most and what he's tried to do and instill with this team, DJ?
Well, I think they've done a nice job of generating turnovers. I mean, that has been the biggest thing.
Trayvon
the
Diggs.
Pass rush has improved. Randy Gregory's been outstanding. But at the end of the day, when you have an offense like they do, think of that college model, right? Let's just try and steal a couple extra possessions. We don't have to be the 85 Bears here, Buck, but if we can get a couple turnovers, you're going to win a lot of games.
Yeah, you can absolutely win a lot of games. I'll say the best thing that Dan Quinn has done is I think he has raised the level of accountability within the team. I think you see that because the defense plays like that. I think it has also carried over to the offense.
And how about if they can get DeMarcus Lawrence back here at some point? When you talk about pass rush that's been improved, and they haven't even really seen him yet. So that could be something that could provide a big boost for the Cowboys down the stretch. That's going to do it for this Monday edition of Move the Sticks. We'll see you back here next week.